All right, you guys, welcome back to another episode of Pseudo Intellectual Live. Thank you so much for tuning in. I always appreciate it. And hey, reminder, if you're watching this on YouTube, we're also on the podcast platform. So wherever you get your podcasts, we are also there. If you want to check us out, audio only format today, we have a very special guest. He's always exciting, never a dull moment with him. The one and only Mr. Gavin McInnes. Gavin. How you been? It's been a long time since we've spoken. We were just kind of going over that before the show started, but it's been a hot minute.
Well, when I met you, you were sort of like just coming on the scene. So most of the stuff we talked about was like strategizing business. So when I see you, I think of like, I don't know, a business project, like a new shoe store or something.
Well, I do remember, I think we were in DC for CRTV tonight. I was wearing a burqa.
Yes.
And I think at one point you told me, like, you know, you'd get a lot more clicks if you showed more like leg or something like that. And I remember thinking, you're not wrong. I don't know if that's the way I'm going to go, but you're not wrong. So.
Well, my other advice to you back then was just say yes to everything.
Yeah.
Like, keep contracts short. Say yes to everything. If you're good, then the demand increases and other people start sort of vying for you. And then you just don't renew your contract. But I find young people, I'm not accusing you of this, they're all like, well, what if like this one character I come up with takes off and becomes the new Batman and I got to write that in? And then the employer is just like, this person's a pain in the ass. Let's just drop the whole deal.
Yeah, well, I feel like I've been pretty lucky with contract negotiations. I mean, we briefly mentioned the whole like Steven Crowder thing. I've been pretty lucky. I feel like of all the people in the space, I've had a relatively low drama go of things.
Knock You've on had wood, zero. You're at zero drama. I can't think of a beef you
Not
ever
zero.
Had.
I mean, I'm not going to bring up all the drama I have had because I don't want people to rehash it and I get in trouble. But it's been very minimal, which I have kind of cultivated. And I feel like it's nice having a husband who understands the space, because anytime I want to pop up with like a really hot take on Twitter or like attack somebody, I'll just vent to him. And I feel like I can, you know, at least get the rage out without costing myself my whole entire career. But Gavin, so there's a lot I want to talk to you about. Have you heard of white rural rage?
Yes.
Okay. So we have a clip here I want to bring in. I don't know if everyone watching this has seen it, but essentially White Rural Rage, and I will mess up that title at some point, it's this new book that is explaining why white rural voters are a threat to democracy. We have this clip from MSNBC that kind of went a bit viral for just the utter contempt these people are talking about with regard to white rural voters. Let's check it out.
Joining us now, Professor of Political Science at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, Tom Schaller, and journalist and opinion writer Paul Waldman. Their new book, out tomorrow, is entitled White Rural Rage, The Threat to American Democracy. And Tom, we'll start with you. Why are white rural voters a threat to democracy at this point? You would think, as we pointed out, looking at Joe Biden's background and Donald Trump's, that the opposite would be true.
I mean, we lay out the fourfold.
Okay, I just want to stop it here. Like, there's no other demographic you could say this about. Just like, why are white people a danger? You can't say that.
Well, the big thing with this went viral initially too, because all the alt-right guys were like, see, Jews are constantly crapping on white people. But the guy that's talking right now is a self-hating Catholic. And this is what I always say to anti-Semites, like, don't let yourself get into this rut of the Jews are responsible for everything. Because sure, the other guy's Jewish, but this guy, Schaller, he just is a self-hating white man. And that's a huge problem in the white community, where they cannot wait to crap on themselves. And the criteria he uses too to describe how they're all bigots is like, they're COVID deniers. They follow QAnon. They are suspicious of Barack Obama's birth certificate. And you're like, none of these things sound that bad.
Yeah, well, I mean, they would probably say that's because we're also bigots. But I mean, you bring up him being Catholic. One of the things I did get in trouble for, and I got calls. So like over the past year, I've gotten a lot of calls from people that I work with, or people that I don't even work with, that we just like know each other and they're concerned. Someone had tweeted something out. I think it was Michael Knowles. He tweeted something out about like Catholics being disproportionate in the Supreme Court. So I thought I was being really funny, and I tweeted something to the effect of, who are Catholics really loyal to? Is it America or is it the Vatican? We can't ignore the disproportionate representation. These Catholics are controlling everything. We need to address the Catholic question. I thought maybe that's a little cheeky and offensive, but people were offended for the wrong reasons. I got angry Catholics in my DMs not realizing I was actually making fun of anti-Semitism. They actually thought I was being anti-Catholic, and I actually got calls about that. So,
well, your joke is a meme. It does really well. I learned about it when I was last in Ireland. Like, I forget the name of the meme, but it's like the Irish Shylock or something.
Yeah.
And it's a guy like this with an Irish flag, and they show like all these Irish people running all these hedge funds and top banks. Like,
I'm Irish American, and they're like three generations removed and stuff.
Yeah, and it's like a third of all U.S. presidents are Irish Catholic and everything.
Exactly. We need to start asking these questions. But yeah, people didn't like that is my point. But yeah, I didn't know. So which one is Catholic? The guy who's closer to the camera?
The farthest away. The guy blabbing.
All right. Let's see.
Interconnected threat that white world voters pose to the country. First of all, and we show 30 polls and national studies to demonstrate this. We provide the receipts in chapter 6. They're the most racist, xenophobic, anti-immigrant, and anti-gay geodemographic group in the country. Second, they're the most conspiracist group. QAnon support and subscribers, election denialism, COVID denialism and scientific skepticism, Obama birtherism. Third, anti-democratic sentiments. They don't believe in an independent press, free speech. They're most likely to say the president should be able to act unilaterally without any checks from Congress or the courts or the bureaucracy. They're also the most strongly white nationalist and white Christian nationalist. And fourth, they are most likely to excuse or justify violence as an acceptable alternative to peaceful public discourse.
Okay, so I mean, like you, I kind of hear them say that. I'm like, oh, base, a lot of that actually sounds really good. But I'm sure they cite it in their book. I don't want to buy it. I don't really believe them that white rural voters are the most racist in the country.
Absolutely not. I want to see the question. The questions were things like, when you see a Supreme Court when you see a group of judges for a county and they're all black females, are you dubious of their meritocracy? Or do you think that affirmative action could be involved? Now, if you say the latter, you're a bigot and you get checked off on the bigot list. Let me see what you said. You know, QAnon. Okay, I bet the South is disproportionately pro-QAnon, but that's still 2% of the population as opposed to 0.5% of the population in the North. I mean, these guys clearly don't like the rural South. They're Yankee snobs. And when you go in with that mentality, then just like the birth certificate, instead of going, oh, you're skeptical and you've looked into this and it is possible Obama wasn't born in Hawaii. Instead of that, it's like, ain't no way that Negro prayers was the president of my country in a legitimate way. Not on my watch. I don't count him. That's who they put in their brains. So they've crowbarred this in. And anyone who's actually been to the white rural South knows that bigotry and xenophobia, it doesn't really come up. Like, no, I was just saying to Anthony, they don't talk about Jews because there are no Jews down there. It's not a thing.
And so I live in Tennessee and I live around Nashville, so it's not at all rural, but we're looking kind of out and we drive around the state a lot. It's a beautiful state, lovely people. And what I think these coastal elitists don't get about like the South is that they're actually like more black people than the Hamptons or wherever they're from. So a lot of Southerners are way more familiar with actually living, knowing, being friends with black people than someone who lives in this like little elitist academic bubble. And I don't think they understand that because they probably have never bothered visiting any of these places they're writing about.
Yeah, the North likes them in theory, but not in practice.
Yeah,
and
not
the
in
South
my backyard.
Likes them in practice and not in theory.
Yeah, well, I mean, do you think there's going to be a point where, I mean, something needs to change? Because I don't know of another population where you can constantly just badmouth them. You're writing books about them. White rural rage. Could you imagine a book, Black Urban Rage? It would not go over well. Do you think there's going to be anything done about this? I mean,
I think these guys screwed up. There was a book, Revolt. It wasn't called Redneck Revolt, but it was another book all about Southern voters, and it did really well, and it was tempered. And what they discovered, they assumed that, that's what we're talking about right now. but it's another book like that. It's a little older. It's there's an R there.
It has a 2.3 star rating on Amazon.
It's like Redneck Revolt or something like that. And I think they're trying to mimic that book. The thing about that book was it came in with an open mind, and it didn't have biased results. So they went in there assuming that they were going to investigate the South and mostly Trump voters and discover that they don't like Negroes and Jews, and they want ladies to be kept at home. And they discovered something that didn't go with their hypothesis. So they followed the truth. And the truth was they were shocked to see guns was like the number two thing that they were concerned about. But the number one thing they hated about Obama, this book was a while ago, was that he kept apologizing for America, and he kept apologizing to the global community. He made NASA all about, you know, how what Muslims have done for space travel and stuff. And that really pissed them off, that Obama wasn't patriotic and proud. And that had never occurred to them. So they were surprised and shocked to discover that. This isn't that book. This book is, I have a hypothesis, and I'm going to snowplow forward and prove to you that rednecks are bad news and they're evil and they're Christian nationalists, whatever that means.
And I think it's kind of ironic that this is coming from the side. And I'm painting these guys with a very broad brushstroke, but they are literally doing everything they can to remove Donald Trump from the ballot. And they are accusing other people of being threats to democracy.
Yes.
I'll come out and say, I don't like democracy. I am not in favor of one vote, one person. I think it's a really bad system, but at least like if I were to pretend to like democracy, I probably wouldn't try to get like Joe Biden off the ballot so people could not vote for him, even if they wanted to.
Yeah. And that's pissing off a lot of people too. I think that's going to start getting a lot of dudes off the couch, a lot of dads who wouldn't normally have voted. It's making people mad. And just like this book, I think this book, the goal was to show the North and to show voters how dangerous rednecks are. And it had the opposite effect. It made everyone hate the North and the liberal snobs more than ever, and made them vote more. They keep ruining their brand, the left.
I mean, I don't know when the last time they had a good brand was. I mean, don't get me wrong, conservatives don't have a good brand either. I think the only reason why you might argue maybe it's becoming a little more trendy isn't necessarily because conservatives have actually started doing better. It's mostly because the left has gone so crazy and cringe where it's like, okay, well, comparatively, I guess the right is a little bit better. But this is, it's interesting to me because it comes on the heels of some really, like the left demonized rural South conservative, no end. These are the greatest evils you'll ever see. But simultaneously, when it comes to actually like bad news cultures, this is on the heels of that woman in India who was gang raped by 7. Like they don't have much to say about that because we're all about cultural relativism. Okay, I want to get your opinion on that issue. But first, I do want to say a big thank you to today's sponsor, Factor. And this is, okay, this is a brand that I've been wanting to be working with for so long. And so when I found out that it was actually happening, I was so thrilled. The first time I ever tried a Factor meal is I had just given birth and I was so tired all the time, had a newborn, didn't have any time to cook, but I also didn't want to be eating garbage. And I was like literally saved by Factor meals. So if you're not familiar with Factor meals, they're fresh, never frozen meals that are chef crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. So you are delivered a box that has, you know, ice packs in it, and you put them in the fridge, and the meals are good for around a week, so you can eat them every week, and they're delivered fresh. It is amazing. There's also calorie smart, protein plus, and keto options, and there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. So again, that's 2-minute meals, so it's way faster than something like takeout or delivery, and it's also more affordable as well. So all around, you're just winning with Factor. There's no prep, no mess. It's flexible as well. You can get as much or as little you need as you need by choosing your meals every week, and you can pause or reschedule, cancel anytime. And it is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast premium options with no cooking required. We've done the math. Factor is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. So head to factormeals.com/1050 and use the code 1050 for 50% off. Again, that's code 1050 at factormeals.com/1050 to get 50% off anytime. I'm hungry and, you know, I feel like fussy because I haven't eaten yet. Factor meals are just like in 2 minutes, the hangriness goes away. So me and my husband, both very thankful for them for that. All right, Gavin, Have you seen that news story about the woman in India, their vloggers, her and her husband got attacked?
Yeah. So the only excuse he says is they say he had a knife to his throat. But 2 hours of raping your wife, what the hell's the matter with you, bro?
Yeah.
He said he got hit in the face with a helmet. Okay, now you have to beat up people when you have no teeth.
I think that I did see a lot of men, and I can't pretend what I would do in this situation. I did see a lot of guys saying, okay, if 7 guys are going at my wife, if I have a knife to my neck, I'm either getting out or I'm getting my throat slit. Like, something's happening. I'm not just sitting and watching it for 2 hours.
2 hours, you're just like this. Like, oh, well, you guys, come on, man. Serious? Another one? Are you serious? That's like 5. Please tell me you're not going to do all 7. Are you nuts? Come on, guys.
And what got me is that after the fact, they did a post on, I think it was Instagram, the one that's now gone viral, where they're both sitting there justifying, it's not all Indians, you know, don't, let's not be rude about this culture. The man is saying this, meanwhile, he's sitting next to his wife with a bruised face, who's just been violated by 7 men. And it's like, this is so disgusting, and it lacks any form of masculinity. I don't know how they didn't feel ashamed posting. I mean, mainly the husband, but also, like, if you've personally been violated, I feel like it's okay to say, hey, F this country. I want nothing to do with this country. Yeah. That's fair. That's fair, I think.
Well, I feel like I should be allowed to be Islamophobic. I was here on September 11th. I watched the planes go into the towers. I saw the second one make impact. I should allow to be a little irrational. We forgive Howard Stern for hating Germany because he comes from Holocaust survivors. Can I get a pass for being dubious of Islam? And as far as this goes, this has happened a million times. These people go to third world countries and they go, I'm going to show you how cultural relativism is what we need to follow, and we're all the same at the end of the day. And then the truth blows up in their face and they still stick to that dumb hypothesis. It's sort of like the previous segment where they have an hypothesis and they won't be stricken from it. There was this woman, Pippa Becca, and she was a feminist activist in Italy. And she said, watch this, I'm going to wear a wedding dress and hitchhike over into the Muslim part of town. I'm going to go to Turkey, Istanbul, whatever. I'm going to keep going east from Italy, and I'm going to show you how safe it is and how fun it is. Not only was she raped to death, she was dismembered, and then they ignited her torso and burnt that like a marshmallow. So she ended up proving the opposite of what she went to prove.
And I feel like, I mean, it's almost a consequence of the West being so safe and so insulated that such retarded ideas are allowed to flourish. And I say that as someone like, I mean, I grew up in Asia. I grew up in a very safe, you know, part of Hong Kong, Singapore and such. But I had a lot of friends in schools who were from countries like India. And I would hear their stories, the way they talked about things. Like, it's not xenophobia or racism to say, yes, objectively, these countries are less safe. And I feel like it's only like the richer and more insulated and liberal you are, the less you are familiar with that reality. And
that's what I keep saying to my daughter. I'm like, trust your instincts. If you feel like you're unsafe in a zone, walking home, walking to a parking lot, wherever, go with your gut and don't worry about how that could be interpreted. Yeah. If you feel like it might make you look prejudiced to cross the road, then be prejudiced and cross the road.
I'd rather be prejudiced than dead, like 100%. I don't care.
Yeah. I don't think a lot of Americans would agree. I think a lot of Americans would rather be dead than racist. Even like with the Drag Queen Story Hour, they're happy to sacrifice their kids to groomers just to be perceived as woke. So we're becoming, in our modern atheism, in our rejection of Christianity, we're becoming a pagan culture. We sacrifice ourselves to the woke gods, whether it's getting raped in India or having our children be read to by a guy with his nuts hanging out.
And that's, I've tweeted about it before, but people are saying that there's like an echo on your end. I'm not sure if you guys are able to.
Oh, you're live now?
Yeah.
That's not good. Check, check, check. Fix my echo.
Check,
audio
check.
Is all that
like
matters.
I'm echoing on your end. But I've seen a number of stories where it's like there's this elementary school, daycare, whatever, child care worker who's convicted of the most terrible things you can imagine. And then they show a picture of that person and it's just like literally the most pedophile looking man I've ever seen in women's clothing. Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. If I had to imagine well, that's quite the, if I had to imagine what a pedophile would look like, it would be just a photo of that person. It's okay, parents, to say, hey, I don't want the weirdo in a dress, the man with a clear fetish looking after my kids. Like, that's, it's okay to be that person. It's okay.
I know a guy who's trying to get a position as deacon, and one of the tests is they show him a picture of a bunch of dudes, and one of them is a pedophile, and you have to spot him. I'm dying to see this picture.
Wait, what? Sorry, could you say that again? I'm not sure.
I know a guy who's applying to be a deacon. Can you hear me now? Let's make sure the audio is good. And one of the tests they do is they show him a picture of a bunch of people. I don't know if they're Boy Scouts. One of them's a pedophile. In the photograph, you have to spot the pedophile. And it's a way to test to see if your instincts are good or if you're a pedophile.
Okay, so what does the pedophile look like?
I was asking the guy about it at my last meeting, Knights of Columbus, and he was like, whatever, it's just a guy. And then everyone's making jokes. And I'm like, no, stop the jokes. I want to hear what he looks like. I want to see this photograph. I want to see how you fail this test. Because you're kind of admitting that physiognomy is a thing and you can spot these people.
I mean, I agree with that. I do think it is a thing, but I'm just surprised that that would be like they would enshrine that in a test. Okay.
Yeah, me too.
Saying that I'm echoing. Yes, I am echoing, but on Gavin's end because they're using speakers. Okay. I think we're good now, though.
Well, no, I want to fix this audio before we move forward. There's nothing worse than an echo. And I don't think it's the speaker. It was on almost nothing before.
No, but I think we're okay now. I don't hear it anymore.
Does the audience agree?
Do you guys agree? Yeah, we're good. We're good. Or at least.
Okay. By the way, while we have this awkward bump in the conversation, the book I was talking about way earlier was called. I sent it to you, Ryan. It's called The Great Revolt. The Inside the Populist Coalition, Reshaping American Politics by Zito Salina and Todd Brad Hess. And that book I think is what they were, no, sorry, Brad Todd and Salina Zito. That was done by a Republican and a Democrat. And I think they did a good job of showing the split between North and South. And they were very amicable towards the South. And that's how those previous guys screwed up is they clearly hate the South. But yeah, this concept of cultural relativism, like there was another woman, a Canadian Somali, and she's like, Somalia is getting a bad reputation. I'm going to move back there and do a vlog, an Instagram account of how fun it is there. So she's at all these cafes and having a great time, and she's raped and murdered within a day. Stop pretending that the West isn't the best.
Well, I mean, I will push back there. There are countries that are way safer than America specifically. So I think it's kind of
safer, not better. Singapore? Singapore's no fun.
Singapore's a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. What's your favorite dive bar in Singapore?
Oh, no, I'm anti dive bar. That is the just and moral position to be.
No, dive bars are the lifeblood of a culture.
No. I love Singapore because it's clean and orderly, but that doesn't mean it's not fun. It can still be very fun. I mean, there's Sentosa, and I grew up, so when I was living in Singapore, I was like 13 or 14, and what's amazing about Singapore is that it's a great place to be as a tween or as a teen because it's so safe, and so my parents could actually feel comfortable with like us going on public transit or like hanging out without having to worry that we might be attacked, like murdered, whatever it may be. It's a very, very safe country. And yeah, like, oh, it's a little stuffy. I would rather that, but also the safety. And that's why, like, growing up in places like Singapore, like Hong Kong, I have a very low tolerance for crime. And I get frustrated with Americans sometimes because I'll like complain about how dangerous American cities are. And you'll be like, oh, well, you know, that's just a big city. It's like, actually, no, there's a lot of big cities out there where you don't have to worry about crime, where you actually can still leave your doors unlocked.
Well, there's an elephant in the room here with this conversation, and everyone ignores it whenever they discuss it. But the elephant is has a lot of melanin, if you're following me.
Like the Scott Adams issue. So what? But what?
Yeah,
what
like there's big the cities. There's big cities in Norway and Finland that also have no crime, and they're not as strict as Singapore.
I mean, but are you saying that like Norway would be better? And Norway, like the Scandinavians are really strict about random stuff. They are. They are anal. They have zero chill. It's like they either go too far one way, like it's in their DNA to be authoritarian, kind of. Either too far to the right or too far to the left.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. But most successful cities are white or Asian, and most unsuccessful cities are more diverse, we'll say. That seems to be the pattern that everyone ignores when they talk about the quality of a city. And they'll say things like, I don't know, like, oh, it's because in Singapore you can't have gum on the streets. Well, no, it's not quite that. I think diversity is something. I mean, you're mixed race. My kids are mixed race. It has its upside, but for the most part, it takes a few centuries to assimilate a mixed culture. And we're not very good at it in America, and we're getting worse.
Okay, so then the question is, why do we have, if we all kind of know that diversity isn't a good thing, we're talking, and by the way, scandals that are like drama that I've been in, there was like one clip that circulated. I discussed this with like Chrissy Mayer, I think last week. Another little sniff. I got dropped by UTA because I said something to the effect that homogenous societies like tend to be safer. They did not like that, but it's true. Like it's not,
it's
even
just a
matter
fact.
Of debate. It's just a fact. But then you look at what's happening in the UK, you look at what's happening in America, there's mass migration. None of these people who are like in these countries wanted it. Nobody voted for it. Why is it still happening then? Like, why has it become the default of the West? If the West is the best, why are we signing off on the destruction of our countries?
Because we have a virus. We have a plague within us called socialism and Marxism. And this plague has decided, whatever are our previous DNC voters, I don't like them anymore. Maybe it was blacks, gays, women, I don't know. But the DNC has decided they don't like their fan base anymore. So they're importing a new fan base. And people go, well, do they realize that this mass importation of new voters is going to destroy the country? And many of the people I know say, yeah, that's on purpose. It's destruction on purpose. I don't agree. I think that destroying the country is ancillary. That's just a side effect. That's collateral damage. They don't care. All they care about is getting more votes and staying in power. If that means that they have to Thanos half of America and 150 million people die, they would say, yeah, well, sorry, tough loss, but you're gone. So I think it's just incompetent greed that is allowed for these voters to come in, because that's what they are to the left. They're just voters.
But I feel... So, yeah, yes, you're right. I think, you know, the Marxism that's at the root of this, the cultural relativism, it's an ideological virus. But one of the reasons why I'm critical of the West right now, and I love so many things about being Western, but I can't say that currently it is the best, because we're not serious countries anymore. Like, we're not. I mean, if you look at the invasion that's happening in the UK, the US, Canada, we are paying for people who hate us and don't share our values and who are not economically contributing. We are paying for them to come here. And it's like, serious countries don't do that. Eva Vladen, the Dutch woman, Eva tweeted something about how, I think in the Netherlands, there was, this migrant, molested, unfortunately, I think a 12-year-old, like essentially like probation or something like that. Slap on the wrist if that. We see way too many stories of that also happening in the UK. The US, hey, they might be out on the street with all bail reform craziness. Like, serious countries don't do that. If we were actually the best countries, wouldn't we be, you know, protecting our women and our children? And I feel like it's a mockery at this point. And when, government aside, I mean, I can't come on YouTube and like condone vigilantism, but you know, I feel like there's something missing from the West now, where people just aren't taking things in their own hands. If someone tried to do that in Russia to a Russian girl, I don't think there would be the same, like, oh, well, you know, what are you going to do response?
Yeah, but I'm optimistic. I think, what's her name in Athens, Georgia? Lakey Riley.
Mm-hmm.
That was a turning point for Americans. I saw Louis C.K. He tweeted out, he goes, wait, so let me get this right winger straight. America's the greatest. America forever. Die for America. And also, America sucks. What has happened to this country? And I don't see that as a contradiction. It's like you have, the, say, you know, it's a Rocky movie and Rocky's the greatest boxer ever. And it's in the part of the movie where he's like a drunk and he's in an alleyway and he gets in a fight in some bar because they said you're not the greatest anymore. And you're still a Rocky fan. You're still a great fighter, Rock. But you're going through a rough phase right now. When we say make America great again, we mean 1983. We mean the 80s. We mean that arrogance, that pro-capitalism 80s that Reagan brought us. That's what we're going for. So, yes, these countries are screwing the pooch right now, but it's something we're trying to fix. And when you talk about Western chauvinism, I mean, I'm going back to the Industrial Revolution till now, really.
So, like, that far back, what do you mean when you say you're going back? Like, that's...
Like, that's what I'm proud of. When I say I'm a Western chauvinist, I'm proud of 1800 till 2015.
Well, hey, 2015 is still, I think, later than a lot of people who are probably watching this would say that the West was great for.
Well, we had Trump. So, and the first year of Trump was good. And then Trump derangement syndrome kicked in. So, let's say 1800 to 2016, I think the West is the best.
Okay. All right, that's interesting. Well, I mean, I'm not anti-Western, but I just feel like it's almost a LARP now when we say the West is the best because it's like, look at us.
No, but Hong Kong is Western. Hong Kong is Britain. Singapore adopted a lot of Western values. I might even call Singapore the West.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways. And I just, so, you know, the West is great, but I also look at, you know, with the LGBT issue, for example, the most pushback that's been effective of getting this, like, that wokeness and over-sexualization out of schools, especially in the UK, has been Muslim parents. And I'm not, like, I've been called an Islamophobe just as much as anybody, actually maybe not you, but like more than the average person. And I still have to say, like, all right, but then why are they able to say, hey, stop sexualizing our kids, when it seems like the average Brit cannot do that? Like, you know, shouldn't we be inspired? And so I think I can agree with, like, appreciating Western history, but I look at Westerners right now and I'm like, man, we are not serious people.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like, even in the States, like, you look at town halls and they're like, this is not right. It's not just Muslims too. It's like Venezuelans.
Oh yeah.
And black women and everyone but normal Westerners.
No, I know the white people are like, well, I would rather you not shove a dildo in my kid's face. Like, I would prefer that you didn't. I don't want to make a big deal out of it.
But if you insist, I don't want to rock the boat.
Right. Right. So we have a super chat. Daniel Jagger says, it's an exercise in union busting. Corporations take the more diverse, the more low trust society factor and apply it to the workforce. Lower wages, higher margins, and larger markets. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's a factor.
So I do want to get your take on, you know, the plight of the modern woman. You've really gone viral several times for your thoughts about feminism. I'm sure you've probably seen this one. Before, this is a girl who went viral. Let me see if I can not be a boomer. I want to get your thoughts on how feminism has kind of steered this woman.
I know I'm probably just being so dramatic and annoying, but this is my first job, like my first 9-to-5 job after college, and I'm in person and I'm commuting in the city and it takes me fucking forever to get there. There's no way I'm going to be able to afford living in the city right now, so that's off the table. Like, fucking duh. If I was able to walk to work, and it'd be fine, but I'm not. So it literally takes me, like, I leave here, like, I get on the train at 7:30 and I don't get home till like 6:15 earliest. And then, like, I don't have time to do anything. I want to shower, eat my dinner and go to sleep. I don't have time or energy to cook my dinner either. Like, I don't have energy to work out. Like, that's out the window. Like, I'm so upset. Oh my God. Nothing to do with my job at all, but just like, the 9-to-5 schedule in general is crazy. Being in the office 9-to-5, like, if it was remote, you get off.
Okay, well, I mean, we see where that's going. A lot of people are calling her entitled. I don't know if it's just because I'm a woman, but I feel for her. That sounds terrible.
Well, women don't belong in the workforce generally. And at that age, you're supposed to love you're almost a masochist at that age. Like, when I started Vice, we would be working 24 hours a day. When it would get close to deadline, the last 3 days before we put out Voice of Montreal, it was called at the time. We didn't sleep for days. We would do coke sometimes to try to stay up. We'd get amphetamines, but and that's how most magazines were done back then, was amphetamines and cocaine. But we loved it. And we would talk about work when we were on our downtime. Like, we'd go to the bar after work and strategize. We didn't have families at the time. This woman, if she was, you know, meant to be in the workforce, that age, 20, let's say 22 to 26, you're supposed to eat, sleep, and breathe work. Talk to anyone who's got millions of dollars in the bank. They got up in the dark. They came home in the dark. And if you don't like that, then you're not, you're being weeded out. Like, that's part of the initiation to the workforce. And the fact that she, like, wants to work out and come home and be able to watch a movie and stuff shows that she doesn't get the big picture. And, by the way, I have zero – I want that. I want her to be with a man. I want her to be at home. I want her to be at home with no kids while they talk about marriage and get ready to have kids. I mean, he's got an apartment. She can just sleep on his bed. I don't understand why these people go, well, we can't afford right now to get married. It's just a bed. It's just more groceries.
Yeah,
I'll pay for the extra bread.
Well, no, I think there's a lot of reason why people say we can't afford to get married is because they want like a wedding. And so they really, what a lot of the time they mean is that we can't afford a wedding, which I don't think is a thing you should be spending a lot of money on. But so I'm going to push back. I don't think men should be working that much either. And I know, like, this is probably... a lot of people watching this are like, what are you saying? Like, yeah, I 100% think that regardless of your gender, you should not be killing yourself for money. I think you should be devoting time for family. I think you should be devoting time for, like, scripture study. I don't think you should be. And that's obviously people are going to do that and they'll be more millionaires. But I am very anti, you know, putting all of your eggs in a single basket. And
it's a phase. I think it's a healthy phase. It's an early 20s phase.
So you've managed to, you're probably like in the 1% of people who are able to, you know, have done that phase and then like get married and have kids. But there are a lot of people where it's like, if you're doing that as a guy in your 20s, you are missing out on the time to be dating a lot of women who are like similarly aged or hanging out with them. And
nah,
like most people still
now
get
you meet people through your
people
work
or the closest you, in their age
you
group.
Meet clients, you meet people at, like, if you're busting your ass like that, you're going to big
so
seminars, meetings,
the workforce, Gavin, there are no female clients.
Well, there's chicks. Unfortunately, there's lots of chicks in the workforce and they all want to get out of it as soon as possible. So it's actually a fairly good gene pool for broads because it's women who have tried careers and are like, I want to get out of this. You seem like a good investment.
But see, so I've been reacting to like a lot of red pill content, a lot of like these ridiculous women who have this expectation of like, oh, I'm not going to date anyone who makes less than $500,000. If you want to take me on a date, it needs to be like $300. I think this is exactly what happens when you date past college age. I very strongly believe that everybody should be trying to like get paired up while they're that like college age, because that's what the last time, like when I was single. And dating is just different when you're both young and both students. There's like none of this expectation of like, I'm only going to date a guy if he's like whatever, which we know it's like that level of hypergamy has been really bad for the rates of singleness in young men. And it just, it makes sure that a woman is investing in a man because like of his core character rather than just, oh, you have all of this money. It also means like, you know, a lot of the baggage that we see young women have now, like, even as they get older, doesn't happen. We need to be pairing up like when we are younger. So like young men need to be having time set aside for courtship.
I agree with you, but that's all pie in the sky should be stuff. You should be married at 19. You should be married as a virgin. You should have 5 kids by the time you're 26, 27 years old. That's all true. But I deal with like what most people are dealt with as a hand. And the hand seems to be, there has to be tons of promiscuity. I don't like this. I'm just telling you what seems to be the norm out there. I don't like this, but if there's going to be promiscuity, okay, ladies, around 25, you got to stop being a slut. You got to stop dating DJs and photographers and guys who promote shows. They're going to cheat on you. Dump dump then and start focusing on guys who are a good long-term investment. And guys, I get that you want to party. All right. You stole liquor from your parents' liquor cabinet at 14. You're 25 now. You're sort of out of the haze of that workaholic phase I mentioned earlier. Start focusing on chicks. I like your version way better. I like your idea of starting in college, but nobody does that anymore. They think of themselves as teens.
Hey, that's not true. If you've been to a Christian or religious university, that is what everybody does. Like ring by spring is kind of what people. So I think it's very segmented. Like, you know, we've both lived in Montreal before. People in Montreal are not doing that.
No.
But the fact that people at Christian universities, like Mormon University, they're absolutely doing that. It is still possible. It is still happening nowadays. I think we just need to expand the pool.
Yeah, but those people don't need our advice. People in Christian colleges, you might as well turn off this show right now because you're doing everything fine. I'm sort of talking about to my Island of Misfit Toys demographic, which is like
telling them to act like the people at Christian colleges.
Right. Well, yeah, but you can't grab a whale and just turn it around 180 degrees and send it a new direction. You got to sort of like push on the side of it and be like, can we kind of go this way a little bit there, Moby?
Yeah. Well, his name is. Regarding the idea that, men should be working and women should be like at home, I very much prefer being at home. I'm super lucky. By the way, you know, I said you're the 1%. I'm also extremely, extremely lucky. I get to like work from home part time. Like I'm blessed beyond belief to be able to do that. And I know that, you know, a lot of women don't have the same opportunity because of the industry they're in or whatever. But I also saw a post that was interesting and that talked about how the idea that it's like man, go work, woman, stay home, man, slave away. That's actually kind of like this boomer American invention that's like very pro corporate, but not necessarily trad or pro family. Like the traddest thing to do, I realize after this post, is that you have your family business that you all work from home at. So the entire family is involved in it, even extended family. You work to build this thing that you own and you're all involved. Even kids, like you grow up working in that same profession. Like that's the trad thing to do. But that, like, obviously for 90% of Americans, that's not going to happen. You do still have like the family-owned business where the son like grows up in it and like there's no college. You just like learn the craft and everyone's involved in it. But like that model is like more and more slipping away. I hope like it would be cool if my daughter would be like, I want to be a podcaster, because then we could have that model of it at my place. But I also don't want her to be a podcaster.
I think a podcaster too is a very ladylike job. There's a lot of lady jobs. Like a podcaster is sort of like being at the town hall right now and announcing to your community that, you know, these stop signs are not working, they're slowing traffic down, and there's never been an accident there. I think we should remove them. Also, this new principal has no experience. I don't know why he was hired. We all have to get together to, like, it's very like helping the community, which I think is very natural for women. But what's not natural for women is going out there and hunting big game. And that's what business is. It's even a trade like plumber, you're hunting woolly mammoths all day. You've got a major problem. It's really hard to figure out. You could destroy this entire house or this entire building, for that record, with your solution. You could make things a lot worse, but you got to grab the bull by the horns and go, I'm going to do this. So I think in a perfect world, if you're a super geek, which I think is 5% of the population, go off to college and get your degree in biotech and make everyone rich or become an engineer. Power to you. Nobody else should go to college. That's the other 95% should stay home. The woman should be at the guy's apartment or wherever he is as he gets on his feet. And he should be busting his ass, taking every single gig he can as a new plumber and saying, yeah, I can make it on Saturday. I can make it on Sunday. And then once he gets out of the weeds, which will be with plumbers, it's 7 years. So we did 20 to 27. And he can still have kids during this time. And then he's going to have more time to be at home as a 27-year-old. That's a good amount of time. You know, here's something about the boomers. I always criticize the boomers, but one thing I do admire is they were still in college. They got married, Your Utopia. They did Your Utopia. And then the kid would just be in a bassinet next to the bed. Like, they didn't constantly worry about, I don't have enough money. And these Zoomers, though they're correct in talking about inflation and student debt, they still aren't willing to suffer the way Gen Xers were. Suffer, it's fun.
Well, yeah, no, you're right. When I see a lot of millennials or Gen Z talk about like why they don't want to have kids, a lot of the time they'll say like, well, income, which is, I mean, I'm not saying that we shouldn't also be trying to get cost of living down and obviously make having a family more affordable. Like, obviously, let's do that. But it's like, if we look at the poorer people in society, they are having the most kids. Like, and if you look at the poorest countries, they are also having the most kids. So I think it's fine to say you don't want to have kids because you won't be able to have your same lifestyle if you haven't, but it's not, it's disingenuous to say you can't afford to have them, because that's a different thing. And, you know, you can't afford to have, it's hard. You're not going to be able to have the same luxuries, but just be upfront that you're saying you would rather those luxuries than having a kid.
I've had this argument 100 times, especially this past month. And I'm like, everything you say about your suffering is accurate. Your debt is insane. I didn't have that kind of debt when I was young, especially Canadian universities.
Yeah.
But the suffering that I endured, I liked it. I slept on a cot next to the boiler in our punk house. So the furnace would come on right next to me, like, every night. I didn't care about that. We found food. We'd buy rice like in buckets this big, and we'd make chili for like the week. And we'd go, you know, crash. Even like, I toured Europe. Oh, you must have been an aristocrat. No, I was gone for 4 months. I just stayed. It was like a punk tour. We stayed at various squats. Like, my buddy got body lice. That was just the life we led. And you can do that back then, because in your early 20s, you only need 4 hours of sleep. You can get in a fight and then go out for dinner after with like a black eye, like it was nothing. These young people are not experiencing life. They're staying at their mom's house because she has a sub-zero fridge and always has fresh blueberries. Fuck blueberries. Literally.
No, and I think, and again, this is not to say that we can't still complain about the state of things and want things to be better, but the fact, like, there's this Gen Z mentality where if something will be hard, then it's not worth doing. And I have a lot of criticisms of the boomers and Gen X, but at least they didn't do that. But I mean, simultaneously, I look at a lot of these like millennials like myself, and it's kind of like, what would a kid like be if they were raised by like that, a person with that type of mentality? And it's kind of like, I don't think just have kids and worry about the rest. I feel like we've almost lost the, you want to be a better formed person before you become a parent. At least have the good foundation, because otherwise we're just raising like more of the same. And I feel like that drop off is kind of, I mean, the responsibility of boomers. Like, there's a lot of boomers who complain, millennials, Gen Z, they don't know how to do this. They're too lazy and entitled to do this. It's like, okay, but who raised them?
Yeah, but Lauren, the beauty of saying just have kids and it'll get figured out is the people you're talking about, they're not watching us. They're not watching this show. They'll never see it. The trailer trash, whatever you're talking about, the rednecks, the meth heads, they're not watching this show. So you can say, have babies, you'll figure it out. And the fact that they're hearing us say this means that it's the right audience. Like, this is like when I was on Fox on Hannity, I said, if my daughter wants to go to spring break, no way. If my son wants to go, all right, well, be careful out there. And they go, what the hell is he talking about? It'll be a big sausage fest if it's just guys. And it's like, I'm not Mao. When I say something, it doesn't become a dictum that everyone follows. So let's be honest about who's tuning into this show. And who's tuning into this show is people who would be great parents. So I say to them, have babies, figure it out. I didn't want kids when I met my wife because I was dumb. I was in my 20s. And I thought, I don't know, I think there's enough people in the world. Thank you very much. And she woke me up. And now I'm mad that I only had three. I think that if you want to make money, the best thing you can do is have a baby, because it puts a fire under your ass.
Mm.
And the next thing you know, you're like, I got to get. And the thing about millennials here, to get back to what we were saying earlier, just for a second, if their boss said, you're not going to believe this, but everyone dropped out and this whole thing is due tomorrow and then we have a party and blah, 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 we got to promote. So I think I need you for like a 24-hour shift from noon today to noon tomorrow. Now, a smart person, and dare I say a Gen Xer, would go, this is actually good because I'm earning a magic chip. Like, I'm getting to a level that no one else was at. Almost like a video game. Like, if you do 24 hours, you get this many red fucking rubies in your purse. And I think a lot of millennials and Zoomers would just go like, no, I'm not at your bitch. I'm not going to sit here for 24 hours. No way. I need my mental health. And they would say no to the guy. His business might fail, whatever. But what young people need to understand is 24-hour shift is a gift because it means you're in a different echelon now. And basically, the dumb version, in the simplest terms, he owes you one. So it's a great place to be.
I will
dare to struggle.
I will say, though, that, you know, I've kind of had the experience both ways. If you have a good relationship with your boss and it's a good company, I think you should be willing to invest as much in your company as they invest in you. But the reality, and that Gen Z are aware of this, for a lot of corporate America, loyalty and hard work is not repaid. Like, you can actually get more money by changing companies every handful of years. I think it's
You figure that out with trial and error. And you eventually realize what company is going to screw you, like, say, Vice, for example.
Right. Or the Amazons of the world when they just outsource your job. Yeah. So you kind of mentioned you didn't want kids. What specifically changed your mind? Because I kind of mentioned red pill. There are a lot of men out there, and there are a lot of women who've been thinking this for the longest time, too. So it's not, the decrease in birth rate, it's really from both genders at this point, who say that it's not worth it to get married and to have kids because family courts they're stacked against men. I think that's fair to say. Divorce rate is pretty high. What would you say to those guys?
It's like saying I don't want to ride my bicycle because I could crash. You know, I don't have a motorcycle. The death rates of motorcycle accidents is way too high. Don't enjoy life. Don't take any risks. Don't get out there. And of course, the globalists love that when you talk about ending your own lineage, your bloodline that goes back 200,000 years. You're just going to end it right here. Take the risk. And yeah, you know, I'm at risk of being sued at all times. So my wife owns my home, all my money. If you sued me, you'd get like 10 grand maybe on a good day. And my lawyers go, you realize if she ever wants to divorce you, you're fucked, right? And I was like, if my wife wants to divorce me, my life's already over. Like, I put everything on black. That's what you got to do. And just because that's risky and dangerous and we live in an unfair world, that's a pussy thing to say. You have to take that risk. And you also, in the marriage, this is kind of a whole other subject, but these guys and gals, they give up. They have a bad year and they're like, well, I guess this didn't work out. You can have a bad year. You know, there's people who go in the military, they don't see their spouse for a year. There's guys who work the night shift. People are suffering a lot worse. There's people with handicapped kids who are so autistic that they'll trash the house if they hear a loud bang. And those people are surviving. So, yeah, it is worth it to take the risk. All things beneficial involve a huge risk. And that's actually what makes marriage and kids so great, is that the stakes are high. And in fact, the stakes are so high and the reward is so good that you look back at your pre-marriage, pre-kids life, and you're like, that was cute and everything. It was real. It was fun. But it wasn't real fun. It was playing house, really. We were play acting.
Right. And one of the things that I also think of when the whole like issue of prenups and divorce comes up is that is another reason why I think it's pairing up younger is a good idea. I was 21 when I met my husband. Neither of us had like any money. The issue, like, what are you trying to split? And I think as you get older, I've seen posts online where this woman was saying, it's great, like me and my partner, of course it's a partner, not a husband or anything like that. They don't share any resources. They have completely separate bank accounts. They have both full-time jobs. They split like the mortgage or the rent, whatever it was, half-half. They split groceries. They literally do not share any income because they're so afraid of getting, I guess, like screwed over by the other person. There was a post I saw where one of these arrangements, they actually wanted to have kids, and the wife was demanding that the husband pay her to bear the child because she would lose out on income for that time where she couldn't work. And it's like, well, that's you can't protect yourself from any risk or anything like that and still expect to have a family and one of like a meaningful relationship, because it doesn't work like that. You can't just be limit your vulnerability till it's zero. It just doesn't work like
that. That's gays. You're basically a gay, or those people are your roommates. Like, if there's no stakes, if there's no risk, then you're not in a relationship. And if you guys have different bank accounts, sorry, but you're not married. You guys, not you, obviously, but these people, they don't seem to understand that anything with massive benefits entails massive risk. And I think that's a great victory for the globalists, is that we got these guys on social media staying anonymous with their anime avatars, calling everyone else cowards and saying, you know, tell the truth, you pussy. And you're like, dude, you're anonymous. You're unmarried. You still live with your parents. You haven't taken any risks. And just like the couple who doesn't share a bank account and wants to make everything, you know, a financial spreadsheet, just like they're not married, these other people aren't living. You got to go bankrupt. You have to fail. I've been an entrepreneur since I was a teenager, and I would say for every time I've made big money, there's been 11 failures. So you got to do a dozen things to be successful. And that's not just being an entrepreneur. It's taking big risks like marriage. Marriage is starting a new company. And the only way to make a new company last is to say, no is not a possibility. This donut shop is going to succeed.
So Jay Basher says, okay, but why are the consequences only for men? No fault divorce. And I suppose the argument against what you're saying is that, okay, but even if you are all in, that doesn't mean that she's going to be. You can't control whether your spouse is, I mean, that's not what I believe. But
well, then don't marry her. That's not a spouse.
Right.
And women suffer too. I mean, you look at bad marriages, the guys who walk out on girls, they can't find him for child support. And now she's a single mom with three kids. No one wants her. She screwed up. I mean, she's got to risk giving up her best years. A woman is fertile, and a woman's fertile from when she starts menstruating, I assume. But as far as like modern society goes, women are like eligible bachelorettes, ready to breed from like 21 to, you know, 30, it starts to get bad. So say you date a guy for 6 years, 21 to 27 takes you a year and a half, maybe 2 years to recover and find a new guy. Now you're 30. You'd be lucky if you could churn out one kid. So putting your eggs in that dude's basket costs you your magical decade. And 20 to 30 is the magic decade that women have. Men don't have a magic decade. Men can meet a chick at 40. It's not great being an old dad. Trust me, I am. But it's still very possible. But women have that magic decade, and they're risking it. So, yeah, they get better alimony. They get better child support. They seem to do better in divorce. But they have high stakes, too. And that's the fun part. That's why marriage is such a big deal. That's why everyone's crying at the wedding, because you did it. This is it. There's no turning back.
And do you... how do you think we can kind of encourage more young people to get married? Because marriage rates are down. I mean, divorce rates are also down, but you know, a lot of people will point out, well, that's just because fewer and fewer people are getting married. And I'm someone who I've had, like, why do you care whether people get married? Like, well, obviously you as an individual, I'm not going to force you to get married, but I'm for small government. And I think it's pretty clear over the past generation or so that the less people are being married and having kids within that marriage, the more things like crime increase. Like there's a lot of social cohesion that rests on marriage. And without it, there are a lot of negatives in society that we're not able to control with government, even though that's inevitably what they do.
Right. Yeah. No, I don't want the government involved. I think satire, ridicule. We should mock empty egg cartons like Taylor Lorenz and Amanda Marcotte and all these sad bloggers who have forgone children and families and have devoted their lives to, I don't know, hate watching, catching someone saying the N-word, talking about Trump and how Trump is terrible. And he, I don't know, Ivanka Trump has a white dog, and that's a sign of racism. Like, they need to be ridiculed. And there should also, like, when a guy dates a girl at 25 and dumps her at 29, her brothers should rough him up. Like, there should be some stigma there. You just robbed her best years. Why is there no stigma there? So I think one of the ways that we combat all this is stop pretending everything is so A-OK, la-di-da. Like the Indian rape. The reason that woman was raped and the reason her husband tolerated it, and the reason that no one is mad at him or them in general is that we're all like everything's groovy. No, we have to bring back shame. We have to bring back pride. We have to bring back values. And part of that is ridiculing those who fuck up.
Aren't you embarrassed?
Well, I feel like shame is something that we are totally deprived of in this modern age. I mean, whether it's the trans issue, like you are a grown man who is like literally wearing prosthetics, trying to dress like a woman. The fact that you even want to is like, that's one issue. We should address that in therapy. But the fact that you are actually going and doing it in public, previous generations, you would have been too ashamed to do that. For a lot of like the leftist activism, when we had more shame in society, it wasn't even a question, because regardless of whether you had the impulses, the social stigma was such that you would never do it out loud. And like I've heard like lefties say like, well, you know, hate never made anyone less gay. If we were to like,
yes, it
I'm
did.
Not in favor of hate necessarily, but if we were to graph like hate versus gayness, it is very clear that things were objectively less gay when there was more shame.
And all of this stuff is a hazing. Like if you go to the fire department or the military or you want to become a cop, you get razzed, you get abused, you get kicked in the ass, you get woken up with freezing cold water. All of those are healthy things to make sure that you're the right person for the job. And marriage and being a workaholic in your early 20s, those are all part of healthy hazing. You know, when we used to bully nerds, back in the Steve Jobs days, they invented computers. Now we worship nerds. And what do? They abuse the power and become sad pedophiles who are severely overweight.
I have a lot of opinions about how Hollywood has portrayed nerds, because there's like the stereotype, well, oh, the jock, the Stacy, they're bad and dumb. Meanwhile, the nerd is actually the kind, righteous, smart one. That's all been a psyop, I realize more and more as I get older, because nerds actually do run the world, whether it's politicians or, you know, big tech like Zuckerberg, and they are evil people. They're not good people.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you. And I grew up the same way. I grew up, I'll never forget this dude, this Aryan guy I used to work with, blonde hair, very popular, very handsome. And he was single at the time. And this girl took him and his other male model looking guy home for a threesome. And she was nervous, I guess. And the second they got there, she started projectile vomiting everywhere. So she was covered in vomit. They brought her into the shower. They washed her. They got her some water. They put her on the couch next to a big salad bowl to barf in. And then they took all her sheets and they washed them in her washer dryer. They made sure that was all, you know, in motion. And eventually they were like, okay, you all right? There's a Sprite on the coffee table. And they left. There was no shenanigans. Those guys have been laid, you know, since a young age because they were handsome dudes and very popular. And I had been brainwashed as a young man to be like, the blonde jock is the date rapist. And then Ducky from 16 Candles, he's the cool guy that everyone picks on, but he's got a heart of gold. And, you know, you become an adult and you see that chick who's passed out at the party and you find out that it was the DJ from American Apparel Radio who hadn't really had a girlfriend. And he was the guy who climbed into bed with her when she was wasted and had sex with her when she was barely alive, which is rape, right? She wasn't coherent. And you realize as you get older, the date raping jocks are doing nothing of the sort, like the Duke LaCrosse case was a lie. And it's all these cool allies, these friends of yours, the trans guy in the bathroom, all of these cool drag queen story guys, all these fun underdogs that are actually out to get revenge for the fact that no one's ever liked them before. So beware of nerds is my takeaway, and I tell that to my daughter.
Well, I mean, that was quite the story. You did circle back to the issue, though, but
all well, true.
That's why we see so many of these Me Too stories coming out of the comedy world, right? And
yeah.
Like it's they're these nerds who aren't really used to all of that female positive attention, and so they exploit it. They're weird with it. But like when you look at someone like Donald Trump, you know, he has all of these like allegations against him. Like it's kind of like what you said. When a man is used to having women throw themselves at him, like if you're a jock, you're good looking and stuff like that, it would be a strange thing for them to risk it all just not that it doesn't happen, but it's like the stereotype that it's the powerful, good-looking man who's like really predatory. It's probably going to be the slimy male feminist who has to cuttlefish his way into seeing any like positive female interactions.
That's been my experience. And Robert Crumb admits it. He goes, I was always a loser. Girls didn't want me. And then all of a sudden when I got famous, now you want me. So I declared revenge on them and I punished them for all the years in high school where I was a zero. And I'm like, yeah, okay. I'm noticing.
Wait, sorry. So István Detzi says male virgin shaming, LOL. We are not male virgin shaming. We are like nerd shaming, which is very different. I just want to point out.
No, I'm male virgin shaming too.
No, that's the most Chad thing you can do as a man is be desirable, but also simultaneously be in full control of your impulses. That
yeah,
is like,
that's not the guy who left that comment. If it's some cowboy who looks like something out of Yellowstone and he's decided he wants to be a virgin when he meets his girlfriend because he's Christian, and then their wedding night is the first time he has had sex, yes, that's great. That's pie in the sky. You're the winner. But the guy who wrote that comment is not that. He's the reason he hasn't been laid is because he doesn't have the balls, and he's using the incel thing. I mean, sorry, the virgin till marriage thing as an excuse. He's actually a loser.
Right. Well, I just want to clarify. I at least am not virgin shaming. It is not the virginity that is a bad thing. It is the lack of desirability, and it is the anti-social behavior.
The two are not mutually exclusive. Like we started the Proud Boys shaming this guy Ben, who was a 24-year-old virgin and didn't think it was a big deal. And he was no Christian saving himself for marriage. He was a Jew who didn't have the balls to make a move.
Okay, all right, with that then. So we have this from Daniel Jagger again. Didn't the post-millennial have a headline stating the show Glee and Tumblr kicked off the woke movement? I don't know.
Like a stretch. I think it was.
I've never watched an episode of Glee.
It was. Political correctness was invented in the early 90s. I remember it being around. Talk to Jim Goad. But it was esoteric. When did it switch into the mainstream? I think it did with the 90s sort of indie rock shoegazing stuff where the nerds were all of a sudden cool again. You had Patton Oswalt and David Cross being considered cooler than, you know, the quarterback of the football team. And all of a sudden the nerds were in control. And then they started, so that was like late 90s, right? And then with the 2000s, they started gaining power and they started taking over comedy. But they didn't really, I don't think woke was more than a laughable threat. I mean, it was annoying from 2005 to 2015. Those 10 years, it was an annoying pest. But with Trump, they really started saying, all right, now I want to sabotage your life. I want you to get fired. I want you to get canceled. I'm going to hurt your children. Like that post-Trump, the losers, the woke losers went from a fruit fly to like an African fucking death wasp.
Boom, these explosions of bullshit.
Yeah, so Retro Fantasy says, all these women saying they hate men are really just lesbians who are mad because straight women have always preferred men.
Yeah, that's true. I think it's also girls that don't get hit on.
Yes.
But yeah. As a girl, it's so easy to get hit on. Ann Coulter talks about this. Don't be fat. Grow your hair long. Wear heels like 3 times a week. And just have like a tiny bit of makeup on. And now you're within that like 6 to 8 zone. It's so easy for them to get in that zone.
No, you're absolutely right. But I think a lot of the... like just the ugliness on the woke side, it's women who are either uncomfortable with male attention or they don't get it. But in either case, they've made the decision to actively embrace everything that makes them undesirable and to try to subvert beauty norms. Like it all is a reaction to male attention either being not present or they're uncomfortable with it. Like I have a theory that that's the root of like 99% of feminism. Because if you look at those like woke transformations where they used to be good looking and pretty or like kind of average, but then they go off the deep end, it's all around male attention. Like they're trying to paint it like, oh, it's female empowerment. No, you are doing this specifically for how you relate to men. If it were only women around, you wouldn't dress like that.
Well, it's also college, too, when men are so horny that you could rub feces all over your face and they'd be like, let's get you washed up and get you into bed. If a woman who looked like half of those modern feminists was like 32 and single and was like, so what do you think of my super short blue bangs and my tit tattoo? Be like, no, thanks. Like, I don't know if you remember this, but when I was in high school and even college, there'd be these dudes that are like, I'm actually asexual. I'm celibate. I'm not trying to retain virginhood, but I'm not interested in sex. And everyone would, all the chicks, or if it was a chick, all the guys would be like, no way. And it would get all this attention. If I got divorced and then I announced like, yeah, I'm actually asexual now, I'm celibate, no one would give a shit. And I would sit there rotting like an elf on a shelf, waiting for anyone to ask me why I'm celibate. So when you're in your early 20s, you can afford to uglify yourself and make up dumb categories like polyamorous because everyone is horny.
Yeah, I mean, there we go. So does anyone have any questions for Gavin? We've got a little bit left of the show, so we're going to be going through some of them. Oh, I have a question. Are you still on YouTube? What's the deal with that? Someone was asking, and I know you got banned at one point. I was wondering if you're unbanned.
I couldn't be more banned from YouTube. I'm still banned from YouTube that if you take clips from my show and put it up, you're banned. Wow. So if you look me up on YouTube, it's like a TED talk I did 15 years ago. And yeah, I've been totally wiped from YouTube. There was a while there when I was getting back and I couldn't help but think YouTube thought that they were getting back at me because it was people stealing my content. But I liked it because it was only small clips. So I guess they found out I don't like it and now it's gone. So I'm only on Twitter.
Okay, so go follow Gavin on Twitter.
Jane X Gavin McInnes. Oh, one more thing. Promo code Chen, C-H-E-N, 20% off, censored.tv, if you don't mind me plugging my network. Yes, you got your own promo code.
So wait, hang on. Plug that more. Who else is on the network?
Censored.tv is a network 24 hours a day. We have tons of shows. I do an hour and a half a day every single day, but we have AIU. We have Elijah Schaefer over here. Look, we interviewed Ye. We got Jim Goad. We got Dwight Hernandez, right? Is that his name? Pat, it's an island of misfit toys.
Drew Hernandez, sorry.
And there's all kinds of archives too, with like Candace Owens debating that professor guy,
Cornel West,
Ann Coulter. So besides the modern shows, me and Anthony Cumia, that are up every day, the archives go on for hundreds of years, where we have these massive debates with like Roger Stone and that other guy.
Mark Lamont Hill.
Mark Lamont Hill. That's it.
All right. Cool. Well,
yeah, lots of stuff.
Do you have a question here for you? Nate asks, ask Gavin if the voting age should be changed to 25.
Yes.
All right. There you go. The
voting should be for landowners only. And I also like Nick Oakes. He's a Proud Boy in jail now for Jan 6. He had a brilliant concept. He goes, we should give everyone living wage. We will pay for your living wage, which is probably like 45 grand a year. The only caveat is, as soon as you sign this contract, you renege your right to vote. You obviously can't vote if we're paying your salary. And when you play that out in your head, America gets very red, very fast, and the blue dies.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm in favor of net taxpayers only voting, service guarantees, citizenship. People know how much I love Starship Troopers, only property owners, all of those things. Well, Gavin, thank you so much. It's been a blast. Aside from X and censored.tv, is there anywhere else that people can follow you, or have you been kind of yeeted from everywhere else?
You can follow me home. I our studio's in the South Bronx. I usually take the 6 train at the Lemur stop. You'll find me there around 8 o'clock at night.
Why are you living in New York? I'm always curious when people
I get
are
that a lot. Good. We're out of here as soon as possible. My sons are thriving in baseball. When your kid is really into baseball, there's always that one coach that they can't wait to get on varsity with. So he's sort of been working his whole life Well, his whole life, he's only 15, but like half of his life has been all about getting to this coach and getting on varsity. So as soon as he finishes that baseball dream, we're off to South Carolina. But I
and being good at it, I can't, if you will.
I can't uproot him right now.
Yeah. I mean, I know, like with kids make it harder to leave, but I'm always so afraid. Like when I find out someone still lives in New York, actual justice warrior, he just got a car stolen. And it's like, you'd leave. Last time I was in New York, like there was this black guy that followed me for like a block yelling, "Hey, Asian woman." And I was wearing a mask because it was like COVID at the time and we had to go anywhere in New York. But it was like, it's scary.
Well, it's usually the top half of your face that gives you away as an Asian.
That's true. I mean, I don't think I look Asian at all, but I was just impressed that he managed to figure that out at all.
Right. It's always with a black guy. I'm going to be honest with you.
Okay. Enough with the drops.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks guys so much for tuning in. Don't forget, like, share, subscribe. It helps us out a lot, and check us out on the podcast platforms. Until next time.
Thanks, Lauren.
Thanks.
I got to pee.